Hey, Project Big Screen listeners, you can find us every Monday on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or YouTube. Prime members can listen ad-free on Amazon Music.
Academy Award winner J.K. Simmons stars in the new MGM Plus original series, The Westies.
There it is, Javits Center.
Biggest construction project in the history of New York falls into the lap of the Irish.
This Irish crime gang built New York City on blood, sweat, and loyalty. Their legend is true.
The Italians outnumber us about 100 to 1.
Their story is criminal.
This Irish guy's threatening war.
He's gotta go.
Keep out of Hell's Kitchen.
The Westies. Watch now. Only on MGM Plus.
Okay, welcome to Lights, Camera, Barstool, September 16th. Today, me and Gooch are doing a review of The Long Walk, the latest Stephen King adaptation, which, man, talk about a guy in the trenches right now. Jesus Christ, they must be...
Which he is, I did not realize. I knew he was old, but someone like posted the video of him like walking around and holy shit, that man is on death's door.
Yeah, he is old. We'll be talking about that. We'll be talking about some other TV shows and some points of order before we start. Sorry, you missed it last week. The medical issues with the LCB, this pod is just a curse on our bodies. It's incredible. I had an abscess in an area where you don't typically want an abscess. I'll tell you what, you never realize how much you're going to miss being able to sit until that right and privilege is taken away from you as a human being. And
that's the danger area for a blogger, a podcaster. We not only are sitting, we sit basically 24/7.
Dude, it's like a fucking plumber losing his hands or something. Like, this is our equivalent. I'm like, we need our ass. We need our asses to be working. And yeah, that was just not fun. It was like a 9 out of 10 pain for 5 days straight. And I do not recommend that to anybody. And speaking of injuries, I mean, your boy. He's just injury prone. Joe Burrow is injury prone.
The discussion has to be had. It has to be had. The man's made of glass. There's like no way around it. Like he's made of glass. He holds onto the ball and he's made of glass. Now he can throw the ball and he can do things that other quarterbacks can't. But like if you're not on the field, I'm sorry. Like this is going to be 3 out of 6 years where he's going to miss most of the season, if not all. Like if we're out of the playoffs, he's not going to come back for 3 games at the end. Like, now, this team, I do think, is like sneakily a lot better than I was expecting. The defense is a lot better, and the line is, I know he got hurt, but has held up well. And I mean, we have Jamar and T. Jake Browning can come in and do some things, is all I'm saying.
He threw 3 picks and you won the game.
Yeah.
Like that's.
And we had 150 yards of offense last week and still won the game. Like this defense is, I don't know how they're good, but they are. They just keep coming up with plays.
Mm-hmm. And I saw Whiskers. I don't know if you saw, he was posting about it earlier.
Yeah.
He said, like,
it gets me too mad because he's like, he was a Bengals fan and now he's not. Like, it makes me too mad when he goes in on the Bengals.
So he didn't really go into them. What he said was, and I agree with this, they need to think of a better name for the injury of turf toe because that sounds like the softest injury ever.
It does.
They need to fix it because it's like a torn tendon or something. Like, you need to make it sound a lot more worse than turf toe.
Yeah, when I saw the injury pop up, I was like, oh, a few weeks, that's better than a high ankle sprain, which is what I thought it was initially. And then they're like, oh, no, he's going to be out 3 months at a minimum. I'm like, oh, well, that's great. Yeah.
It's turf toe just sounds like it sounds like something you come back from in a week. There's just no way about it. They need to fix that. And then my glorious king plays tonight and that's going to be a fun one.
It's Tampa, right?
Yeah, it's going to be fun watching Harbaugh versus Carroll for like the first time since college.
Oh yeah,
and their rivalry is always been fun, so that'll be an interesting.
I got a Buka on my team. I don't need him to go. I've already got my win locked up for my fantasy football squad. But Buka, what a dog!
I got 4 fantasy leagues. I don't know how this happened. I'm trying to ramp down on fantasy, and somehow I ended up in 4 leagues this year. I got one at work. Oh. I got one that I've managed for like 10 plus years with my home friends, and then we decided to do a wives and girlfriends league where they drafted the team.
Okay.
Fucked, by the way. Fucking fiance drafted Caleb Williams in like the 3rd round. Like it was absolutely fucked. And I also have like another one that a different friend did, and I'm somehow losing all 4 leagues. No one likes the fantasy talk ever, but like it's just one of those things where like I woke up in the morning, like, how am I possibly going to lose 4-4. Like, and I thought I could pick the same people. It's whatever. Anyway, we could talk about some stuff. The Emmys were last night. There's nothing crazy that happened, I would say. Drama and comedy, we could just run through some of the bigger winners. Mm-hmm. The Pitt won for a drama series. Noah Wyle won for lead actor. Britt Lauer won for Severance. Tramell Tillman won for Severance. Catherine Lanasa won for The Pitt. And then our good boy Tony Gilroy won for Andor. So props to Andor, finally getting a little bit more shine, I would say. I still haven't gotten to The Pit. I don't like serious hospital shows. It's not my thing.
Yeah, it's kind of a double whammy for me where I don't do medical dramas ever, really ever. And it's literally The Pit. It's Pittsburgh. Like, it's so Pittsburgh coded. Fuck that. But I'm sure it's great. Like, everyone whose opinions I trust have raved about it. So sounds like a very deserving win. And then, yeah, there were some fun speeches. I didn't tune in live. Nate Bargatze hosted, and I heard mixed reviews from that. My parents liked it. So I think that's kind of the audience. That's the audience I think cable television is going for anyways. Some of the better acceptance speeches, Chris Emiliotta getting up there and just screaming, "I love acting." That's great. Anytime someone shows energy on stage, it makes for a good night. The Britt Lauer putting the "Let Me Out" on the back of her acceptance speech, like, note. Did you see that?
Yeah.
Yeah, that was fun. The Sydney Sweeney coming on stage. great moment.
Yeah.
To give the Emmy to 15-year-old Colin, what is his name? Colin Cooper, I believe.
Colin Cooper's the old guy from October Sky, right?
Oh. Well, the young 15-year-old boy, as a former 15-year-old boy, I got to tell you, I think the Emmy was an afterthought for him in that moment. And then let me think of what else. Seth Rogen with a triple crown, basically. Acting, yeah. Directing, and writing. Crazy. Yeah, the Emmys, it's not that they're stupid. It's just, they're always at a very random time. There's multiple different kinds of Emmys throughout the year. There's obviously like the daytime Emmys. Jeff has like multiple Emmys. I don't know how. And
TV, baby.
I never know like what is the what is eligible. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Like the time slots never make sense to me. Like of when, like Rebel Ridge just won an Emmy like a week ago. Because they announced some stuff early. That movie came out a year and a half ago.
Yeah, the eligibility period is strange. And you could say the same thing with like Globes, honestly, too. And by the way, just to recap some of the other ones, too. For comedy, The Studio won for Best Series. Gene Smart won for Best Actress for Hacks. Seth Rogen for Best Actor. Jeff Hiller won. He beat out a stacked field for supporting actor in a comedy. He's in Somebody Somewhere, which I've never even heard of. And he beat out Ike Barinholtz, Coleman Domingo, Eben Moss Bachrach, and Harrison Ford. He beat out like a pretty heavy set cast and crew. So maybe we'll check that out. Hannah Einbinder won for supporting actress for Hacks as well. And the Studio won for writing. So like you're saying, Studio got a lot of love, rightfully so. And it's also one of those things where it's fortunate that the Studio is a genuinely good show, because like I do feel like they love fart sniffing in these awards, and anything industry related, they typically will love. So I'm happy it generally deserves it. It's like a Nepo kid that actually won and deserves the praise, which we'll talk about with Long Walk as well.
Also nice to see a comedy series win in the comedy category.
Rare. Very rare. Good for them. And then Adolescence won basically everything else, anthology, other than Best Lead Actress, which went to, or Supporting Actress, which went to Emiliotti, which, again, well-deserved. She was awesome in The Penguin. Mm-hmm. I still haven't watched Adolescence. That's another one where I'm just like, feels a little heavy. Like, it's just one of those ones where, like, I love Stephen Graham. It looks like an interesting enough topic, but I just, like, that is just a little, like, it's not what I typically watch a lot of TV for, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I think I will end up watching that one because, well, my girlfriend has been like on me. She's like, it's actually like incredible. So
for nothing but good things.
Yeah.
Same thing with The Pit. It's one of those things where like I'll definitely get to it eventually. It's just like I'm not running to see something around a topic I'm not like Yeah. Super excited to watch, you know what I mean? Speaking of not excited to watch, got our first look at Liam Hemsworth as The Witcher. And I guess The Witcher season 4. This is, like, I don't know who's watching this still. Because
me neither.
The quality went down basically every season. They just made these spin-off things, which all basically failed. And then Henry Cavill, who was so passionate and so excited to do the series, basically leaves it. And not like shit talks him on the way out, but he's just like, I don't feel like we're doing this like really justice, this series. And I don't know. I don't really know how Witcher book fans feel about this series. I don't really know how, like, me as a game fan, I didn't love it. And now just subbing in Liam Hemsworth as for Henry Cavill is just so funny to me. It's just like, it sucks. It sucks. It's a cool property, cool IP. Feel like they could have done a lot better with it.
Yeah, it feels like there was a lot of things going wrong. Like, I think the series was fine. And I was someone who did read the books. Like, the series was fine, not entirely true to the books, but that's not entirely necessary all the time. And I don't think it was going to be feasible on a television budget. But there were things going wrong. Like, there was a clear drop in quality even before Henry Cavill had departed. They had tried to do these spinoff movies and animated series that none of them have worked. The Michelle Yeoh one was straight up dog shit. I'm sure they paid a hefty price for these rights, but maybe it was time to, you know, put a pause on things and just come back to it when you had some better ideas and better traction. Because, like you said, who's going to watch this? They've lost the game fans. They never really had the book fans. The Henry Cavill fans are gone. Liam Hemsworth doesn't have fucking shooters. I'm sorry. Like, no one's going to watch this.
I don't know what the answer would have been either. Like, I don't know that there's some dream casting of replacing Geralt with someone else, but I don't know. Kind of stunk.
Yeah.
Damn, man. The reviews on season 3 got to 79%. That season 3 was not good. That's crazy to me. Whatever. But shout out to what's his name? Henry Cavill, who also, by the way, Highlander got delayed because Henry Cavill got injured doing something on the set for it. I'm very excited for that, though. Highlander, I think I loved the original Highlander, which is it's such a cool concept, which has been often imitated, never really replicated in a lot of different terrible movies. And the fact that I like the movie so much and it's so good, despite the fact that you have so many things that should be terrible. Like, it's Sean Connery playing an Egyptian that has a Scottish accent. It's Chris Lambert, who's terrible, so bad at acting, like as your lead star. Like, so many things about it are so should be terrible, and it's still such a good movie. The fact that you sub in Henry Cavill and like Russell Crowe and like all these other great cast members, like, this should be awesome. It sucks he's injured, but he also has Warhammer 2, another thing which he's been openly very passionate about coming up at some point. I think that's way further down the line.
Yeah, I'm starting to think that's not going to happen. But big brain theory on this injury. Sucks it happened, but that does mean they're doing some like legit practical action within this. If he's getting an injury, if you're hurting Henry Cavill, you're doing some metal shit out there. That's a big guy. Yeah,
Stahelski's at the helm of it. Got again Crow, Dave Bautista, Karen Gillan, Jaimin Hansu. Like, it's good. It's a good crew. Again, really cool concept. If you've never seen the original, I would highly recommend it. Never watch the second one, though. The Quickening, one of the worst movies ever. One of the funniest production stories ever, if you ever have a chance to read about that, though. Demon Slayer, Infinity Castle. Got the biggest opening for international movie ever in the United States. $70 million, suck it, Clemmer.
Yeah, right here, I'll add in Clemmer telling us that we were fucking idiots for thinking that Demon Slayer would break 100 million at the U.S. box office.
That's like going to see fucking like Demon Slayer movie. Yeah. Like, you would understand
that. I might have to see that. That's coming out in September.
Those are great movies, too. That'll probably make like $100 million.
Dude, Mugen Train was
not in the U.S.
Yes.
It will not.
It'll clear that easily. It did $70 million its opening weekend here.
First weekend. By the way, there were some bad stuff happening at one of these openings. You sent that clip, right? Good lord.
I'm sorry about that. I had to go to the bathroom during my screening. Couldn't make it to the. If you didn't see this video, I don't know where it was. It looks like the AMC Lincoln Square IMAX theater. I don't know if it was that.
No way.
But one of the patrons towards the end of the film did decide to stand up and just start pissing. And then got his shit rocked by the guy who was sitting in front of him. The guy in front of him got up and literally punched him 16 times in a row, like IP man, like straight to the chest.
A million times right in the face, like beat down from the low ground, too. Pretty impressive.
And we told Klimmer, that those audiences that go to these anime films in the US are fucking insane people. They're crazy.
Yeah, I'm actually pretty excited to watch this too, because Demon Slayer is like a damn good anime. Also, Channing Tatum apparently involved. I didn't realize that until all this marketing stuff came out with the release. Yeah, that's cool.
Yeah, very cool. Him and his daughter, I guess, have been watching it since the beginning, and that's been kind of a thing between them. And she pushed him to get into the movie, and he did it, which is awesome. I don't know who he's voicing though.
Yeah, I think it's a newer character, but either way, I think that's pretty cool.
Outshine is the number one frozen fruit bar brand in America, and once you try them, it's easy to see why. Their fruit bars and mini fruit pops are made with real fruit or fruit juice using simple ingredients you can pronounce. That means no high fructose corn syrup and no artificial colors or flavors. Outshine bars are gluten-free and even a good source of vitamin C. And the flavor lineup? It's stacked. We're talking strawberry, mango, coconut, watermelon, pineapple, cherry, you name it, there's something for whatever you're craving. You've got classic fruit bars, mini fruit pops, and fruit blends that swirl multiple flavors together. Think pina colada, cherry limeade, and more. Find your new favorite refreshing snack, Outshine, at retailers nationwide.
A24 is buying the rights to the Texas Chainsaw Massacre. The TV series will be up first with Glenn Powell producing. I think all that sounds good. A24 getting their hands on a good property like this or good IP. And then also Glenn Powell, obviously very famous Texan. You know what I mean? Like you're mixing together a lot of good stuff. The series element of it is interesting to me because I feel like there's such an obvious formula that they do with all the movies. It's like, here's just a quick installment of this. But I guess maybe if you do it anthology style, like here's a new group, here's a new group, here's a new group every episode, that could be cool. If you want to do it and extend it. I don't know how you'd extend one single group with the Texas Chainsaw Massacre, but I don't know either. Shout out to the Beav. The Beav, I believe, is the one who has the rights on this, right?
Justin Bieber?
No, the Beav, Kate's husband.
Has the rights to the Texas Chainsaw Massacre?
Am I crazy? Am I wrong on that? I thought he did.
That's a crazy bit of lore if he does.
Or like manages it or something like that. I don't remember. I remember there's something with that, but I'll double check with that. I might be wrong, but I'm pretty sure it's that. I know he has the rights to a very big horror franchise. I'm just forgetting off the top of my head. But I'm pretty sure it's Texas Chainsaw Massacre. But anyway, yeah, really cool. Shout out to Texas Chainsaw Massacre and Glenn Powell. I think that's a good fit.
Yeah.
Got our first teaser for the Super Mario Galaxy movie. Sure.
Yeah.
I mean,
it was going to happen.
Yeah.
I do like that little universe they're building out. I know some people poo-poo the Super Mario Brothers movie because it's very childish. But, I mean, what the fuck did you expect? It's a movie for kids. And I do kind of like that little universe that they're going to... Like, I think you can do some interesting things there for children. Like, I think that there's a lot of different worlds you can go to. It seems like a fun place to, you know... build out. I don't know who are they going to cast as Wario. I mean, do they cast
anyone?
I mean, they have to do Wario and Waluigi. They're doing.
I guess the good thing is you can kind of cast that a little bit later if you want to.
But you have to, in my opinion, cast like evil Chris Pratt and evil Charlie Day. You know what I mean? Like you have to cast based on them. Like you have to.
You could just have them do evil voices if you want to save some money.
That's true. Chris Pratt does. I mean, he voices many animated characters. Who's to say that's outside of his range?
Talking about motherfucking Garfield. I don't see anything crazy or anything about casting for different people yet. But yeah, I mean, you could do just having them do a goofy voice. I'm sure they'd be thrilled with that. And they get to save money, too. So it's a double win. Paramount is preparing a bid to buy Warner Brothers, which I
think there's...
This is a weird one to try to digest, but I think we could try to break it down a little bit. Paramount, I think, has been very successful over the last few years, especially with like kind of saving the theatrical experience. And Warner Brothers, like, will take a dump all over Zaslav any day of the week. The people, I forget who's in charge of their.
It's DeLuca and there's two people. You're right. The head of their film division.
Michael DeLuca and Pamela Abdi.
There it is.
Co-chairpersons of their motion picture group. So I think that like they're doing a great job because the Warner Brothers, like their original, their movies that have been coming out have all been good too. So that part of it makes me like, and part of my brain, I'm like, I want anything that involves movie IP away from Zaslav, like in perpetuity. At the same time, I don't want all of the eggs of every movie in one basket. And I don't want a monopoly. I want there to be as many studios as humanly possible because they compete, they elevate each other. With like, you're one of like, if it's just Paramount versus Disney every year, that and like with Universal shrinking, like it's going to not be, the movies won't be as good because they can dump out whatever they want.
Yeah, you're exactly right. Like, in theory, you think, hey, this is a great movie studio, you know, kind of coming in and helping a movie studio that's been putting out good movies, but is like, very publicly has been financially struggling for the better part of 20 years now. So like the idea of that, how on paper, that could seem like a good idea. But looking at what's happened with Disney and Fox really makes me say no to this. Like, I don't think this should be allowed. I really think retroactively, looking back at that Disney Fox deal, that probably should not have been allowed. Like you said, more studios at the end of the day will mean a better product for us, more competition at least.
Yeah.
Yeah. All that IP underneath one roof, I think is just has shown to be not the best way to do things.
So if they were to buy them, just looking at the market share of the major movie studios, Disney has 25% and change of the market share. Then it's Universal at 21, and then Warner Brothers at 13.5 about. And if they were to, Paramount were to buy them, Paramount's at 10%, then they would immediately become obviously second place, only behind Disney by a little bit. And Disney, again, they have all the major, major, major fucking sub studios and all that shit too. So part of it, I just want as many studios independently running as possible, like not, and you know, elevating, competing each other. Monopolies are bad. It never works. And if the movie studios, if it's just Disney, Universal and Paramount Warner, I guess, and they know they can just put out whatever they want because you have no other options, so, and you can't pick anywhere else, and they can just dump out slop fests against each other, they're just going to do that because that's going to make money. And I'd rather them all be competing to try and buy and purchase the best product. It also helps the people making these movies too. You know what I mean?
Like, yeah, it's
just Disney trying to outbid one or two other companies. Then it's cheaper for them. It's cheaper for them, I guess. So
in an ideal world, it would be someone like Apple coming in and buying Warner Brothers. Warner Brothers just needs money more than, like, they don't,
yeah,
they don't need to blend. They have a great library. They have so much IP. They just don't have any fucking cash on hand. It's crazy.
And Amazon, and I'm just looking at like the mini majors.
Yeah. Amazon MGM, yeah.
Amazon MGM at 3%. Lionsgate at 3%. A24 at less than almost 2%. Like,
yeah.
Yeah, it's there's not a lot there. But yeah, I want them to, mixed feelings. We'll land on that.
And yeah, I think before this year, more people might have been on board with this. But like you pointed out, Warner Brothers just had a fantastic year. They really have a great slate, diverse slate, a lot of money makers. I'd hate for this to be the way they go out because it seems like they have a really promising future ahead.
Yeah. We had our first trailer for The Rip. A group of Miami cops discover a stash of millions in cash, leading to distrust as outsiders learn about the huge seizure, making them question who to rely on. Directed by Joe Carnahan, who obviously has a very extensive action resume. Matt Damon, Ben Affleck, Steven Yeun, Tiana Taylor, among others. I don't know how I feel about this one. Because I watched the trailer and I'm like, part of me is like, I like how Ben Affleck got them to pay him to go down to Miami and hang out with Latinos for 6 months while he makes a movie. Good on you. And another part of me is like, hey, Matt Damon and Ben Affleck hanging out, that typically works in most cases. And then another part of me is like, hey, if I was looking at this concept and the way this looks versus if it was any other actors and any other situation, I'd be like, this doesn't look that great.
Yeah. The cast is doing a lot of heavy lifting here because everything else on paper, if you told me like Joe Carnahan has a straight to streaming movie coming out at the end of January, does that move the needle for you at all?
Not really.
No. And I don't hate Joe Carnahan as a, like, he makes some fun movies like A-Team, The Gray, Smoking Aces, the Frank Blacklist, Grillo baby. Movie. The Frank Grillo movie, Boss Level.
Cop Shop, too.
Yeah. But none of these are, I think, up to the Matt Damon, Ben Affleck, you know, class of films. And they've done some garbage stuff, but like them, you know, anytime they get together, you expect something great. And this could be, don't get me wrong, it's just nothing outside of the cast is really giving me any promise. Now, the trailer did look good.
It is good, I will cast, say that. Though. Good cast.
It's a great cast. It's a great cast. And that release date, I do kind of think they're putting it out at the end of January because they want Matt Damon and Ben Affleck to do press during the Super Bowl week.
Oh, yeah, good point.
Yeah.
The Dunkin' commercials and all that bullshit, too.
Yes, yeah. They're like the kings of doing like the sports radio circuits for promoting films. So that could be why they're doing that release date. And Matt Damon can roll right into doing Odyssey press right after that.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think I'm with you. I just it's one of those things where conceptually Netflix dump in January, straight to streaming movie, cops, like cop action thriller from Carnahan, like none of it's super exciting. But again, it's, you know, it's Affleck and Damon, you know? So part of me wants that.
But we did an Affleck Damon straight to streaming movie last year, which was terrible.
That's true. It was not
Casey
good.
Affleck, but
was Casey, what was it called again? The Apple TV one?
The Instigators.
The Instigators. Baby. Oh, Ving Rhames, who couldn't move at playing the most menacing bad guy. It's tough. And else, but they did
The Last Duel.
The Last Duel, which I liked. I'm a beater. Oh, I'm a beater.
Good movie. Yeah. They need to get back together and write and direct together.
I agree. That I could not agree with that more.
Feeling lucky? You should be. Meet the new Lucky One sweet tea from Miss Peaches, the vodka drink that's positively doing good. Made with real tea and real vodka, non-carbonated, 100 calories. And here's the scoop. Their new sweet tea is the only vodka-based sweet tea on the market. Simple ingredients in a smooth, full flavor that makes it taste just like the real sweet tea. Best part? Every can helps rescue dogs find their forever homes as they work to a goal of donating $1 million to dog rescues in 2026. So if you love true sweet tea, this one's a no-brainer. Pick up a Lucky One sweet tea today and give back one can at a time.
Just some TV reviews really quick. Alien Earth, still been crushing it, in my opinion. It's one of those things where I think I've mentioned this a few times when we've talked about it before. It's such like a Noah Hawley kind of slow burn where I'm like, I totally would understand if other people are watching this, like big fans of Aliens or God forbid, like AVP and shit like that. Like, and they're like watching this and they're like, why am I, this is boring. Like I'm fascinated by this shit. I think it's very cool, creepy, spooky, very interesting, like dialogue and like commentary on humanity stuff. And I like it a lot. Looks great. Looks fantastic. Love the retro tech shit. And I don't know. I'm just digging it a lot. I'm digging everything about it.
Yeah, me too. You like it. I like it. Sigourney Weaver likes it. So all you alien truthers, like, get the fuck out of here. It's been good. Like, it looks, like you said, looks fantastic. I love the direction they're taking all these different storylines. The Prodigy, that's my goat now. That man getting on that table and reading off the codes of international business to that woman, to the Yutani, that was great. I don't want to spoil it too much, but that was just an awesome moment. He's been fantastic all season, and that goddamn that alien, the eye alien, just continues to be so fucking awesome. All the different aliens have been great, like the outside of the xenomorphs, and the xenomorphs been great, obviously my goat, but that alien eye, the eye alien, whatever you want to call it, that thing rules. Rules so hard.
Dude, it's the best. Just watching everything, like, oh,
yes,
dude, so creepy. But yeah, really been digging that. Peacemaker, obviously, also still rolling. I feel like I'm in the minority on Peacemaker, where I'm like, I haven't really connected with it. Like the first season, I felt was so kinetic and effortlessly funny, and like it gave you the setup you need for the character and the background and all that shit. But it was still rolling, like it was. Everything was going, and this season has felt very like I don't know. It feels like we're really bogged down. It's not really that's near. Not I wouldn't even put it in the same like stratosphere humor wise. Like it's still very like there's still moments right where like you feel the flashes of it. Like the bird blindness thing. Everything with Tim Meadows has been fantastic, but like it's not even close in that realm. I don't think it's been nearly as funny. I think the story is still cool, whatever, like interesting. I'm following along from that perspective, but it doesn't really feel like it's the same show. And that to me has been kind of a bummer.
Yeah. And I think some of that's kind of a function of like the character growth of Peacemaker in the first season. Obviously he's an asshole at the beginning of the season, but it's very funny to watch him, you know, operate as an asshole. I don't know. And now he's, you know, a better person because of everything he went through, but it does feel like he's a bit hamstrung comedically. I'm not connecting with the season the way I really hoped. Another thing is I don't care for these multiversal stories, and I kind of shocked that I know Gunn wants to get him to the main DCU plot line, and he already did by just waving that off in season two. So this multiversal story being, you know, the crux of the season doesn't make a ton of sense for me. And I don't find it very interesting, to be honest. Like, I think there's a reveal coming that could be very awesome, and there's some cameos coming up that could be really cool. But is that why I tune into Peacemaker? No.
It's just not a big bummer too, because I thought he was such a fucking highlight in season one. Vigilante's been like a nothing in this one.
Yes. He had one really funny line the third episode when he was like talking about sex. But that's like the only funny thing he's had to do the whole year.
Yeah, it's just been, and it's like a lot of the side characters in this, a lot of them, and that's kind of I think what was so cool about the first season is like it's a ton of Peacemaker. You get obviously a little bit of like Economos and what's her name? I almost said Heathcliff.
Harcourt.
Hardcore and like out of bio, like this season feels like it's all of them, and I feel like we're not getting nearly enough Peacemaker. Vigilante, who was such a fucking so funny in that first season, there's just nothing with him really in this season. It's been a bummer, and it can always go up, and I think you could definitely.
James Gunn has said like the end of this season, the back four episodes are like the favorite, his favorite thing that he's ever written personally.
Mm-hmm.
Take that for what I mean. You got to take that with a grain of salt. But this could turn around.
It's great.
And there's a lot of people. I mean, like, to be fair, I think, like you said, we are in the minority. I think most people are very much enjoying this. But to me, it feels a bit like later seasons of Ted Lasso, where it's a great first season, and then it becomes a little too conscious of, like, character growth and being more serious when it's maybe this isn't the show for that.
And again, I don't want to say, I think I mentioned this last time when we were talking about Peacemaker, and I don't want to say it's like a great comparison, but it does remind me a little bit of Barry in a way, where like Barry just did like a full pendulum swing of like what they were doing, and I didn't love that. And I think it's different there, obviously, like way different as far because like the whole structure of the show basically changed. But it just reminds me of that, because Cena was effortlessly funny, and that's why I wanted to watch it. I wanted to watch it because Peacemaker is funny, doing all these crazy things. The story is cool too, but that to me was like the backseat here. Very and now active. That's become the front seat driver, and I hate that.
I will say he is acting like
very good.
He's still a really good actor. It's just I'd prefer to see him flex his comedic muscles, because he's one of the few people working that really has it.
Yeah. It's been a bummer. And again, could not clarify this more. We are definitely in the minority here. When you see us post about it, people are always like, well, I love it. Oh, great. For me personally, I've just not been connecting with it the way I had hoped, especially after such a fantastic, like one of the better superhero seasons of TV. Like to me, like up there with like the Lokis of the world, better seasons of TV
for sure.
The first one. And lastly, one last show I just want to mention is Task on Max. I don't know if you've watched that yet.
I haven't. What is this show? I saw some people post about it.
Yeah, it's on Max. We actually got pitched someone for it a while ago, I think. But it's like it's a show from the guy that made Mayor of Easttown, and it's like a Philly-based kind of crime FBI manhunt show. Been very good. Been very, very good. It just through two episodes, but very much enjoying it so far. Another HBO banger from our Mayor of Easttown.
Oh, okay. Is it the HBO Sunday night slot right now?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. So it's probably good.
Yeah, big time. But yeah, just wanted to throw out a little shout out for them as well. Anything else TV wise that you've been watching?
No, not really. One Piece, absolutely cooking right now.
Mm-hmm.
Fuck the Gorosei.
Started watching Mr. In Between. You ever watch that?
Nah.
Australian crime show. Bald guy, pretty good. Start watching that.
Bald guy.
Yeah, it's like a bald guy. That's like it's kind of like a car. It's kind of like crime comedy a little bit. Scott, you've seen Justified, right?
Yeah.
Do you know the who's the guy, like the doofus that he's always arresting, that kind of works for Walton Goggins sometimes?
Yeah, I know who you're talking about.
I don't remember his name offhand, but like that guy. So that actor's Australian in real life, and he plays like a criminal in it too. I'm trying to think if who else might know from her. I don't know. It's a decent show though. But yeah, so that's been some of the stuff I've been watching. One Piece. I don't think I'll ever get there. When does the new live action season come out?
Soon, I think. You should hop in once they do the Netflix remake, when they're going to start remaking the series. Do you know about that?
They're just redoing?
Yeah. Another studio, Wit, the studio that did Attack on Titan, is... Yeah, remaking it from the beginning. It's going to release on Netflix, and they're basically just cleaning up the pacing issues.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The, what do you call it? I do think that if any studio was going to do it, that is actually a pretty good one, because their animation did look great. That's one of those ones where you hear a remake and you're afraid it's going to be like some CGI bullshit, like that Berserk remake, which was horrid. So that could have been, could be worse.
Hey, it's Fran from Chicks in the Office. It's peak summer. One plan is turning into five, but trust, I'll be wearing Abercrombie to all of them. Catch me in their Sloan tailored pant at work, and then the happy hour right after. The Dylan dress for dinner plans when you want something easy but still put together. And of course, their denim. Because Abercrombie denim just works, no matter the plan. Keep up with the pace of summer without overthinking it. Shop in the app, online, and in stores.
Now we can talk about The Long Walk. A group of teenage boys compete in an annual contest known as the Long Walk, where they must maintain a certain walking speed or get shot. Directed by Francis Lawrence, who did The Hunger Games, Constantine, among other things. Starring Cooper Hoffman, David Johnson, Charlie Plummer, and Mark Hamill, among others. We've talked a decent amount about Stephen King adaptations and how they're mostly bad. Like, There are highs, there are the extreme, extreme highs where you get some of the best movies ever made, and then but that is like the 2% of Stephen King adaptations. A lot of them are bad. And I would happily report that this is not the case here. I think that The Long Walk was a very solid movie. Interesting concept, which obviously is like a 50-year-old book, like people know, I guess, and all that. But like, it's a cool concept. Acted exceptionally across the board, in my opinion. And I think it looked cool, looked good, which is another part where, like, and we'll talk a little bit about production stuff later. I think it's a tough movie to try and make sure you look right, and I think it looked right. But yeah, I really liked it. It's a movie I think it could resonate with a lot of different people, a lot of different groups. I don't think you need to be, you know, hey, I'm in the mood for this, in the mood for this. I think this is just like a very good, solid overall movie. I don't think it's like one of the best of the year or anything like that, but I think it's very, very good.
Yeah, I've seen some people saying best of the year, top five of the year. I don't think it reaches those zones, but it's clearly well made. Like, it is, they set out to make an R-rated YA movie, and I think they executed as well as they could have in that zone. There are some complaints I have, like narratively. I think it, even at 90 minutes, you can start to feel the length towards the end, just because it almost operates like a play. Like, you barely ever leave the road that they're on, and it's kind of a one setting movie. But the acting, like you brought up, across the board, great. But Hoffman and Johnson, who share probably 80%, 90% of the screen time, they just knock the ball out of the park, especially Johnson, who seen him in three things now, and he's just fantastic. He's really fucking good, very charismatic, commands the screen. So great. And for that reason, you know, I had a great time. I think if you have anybody lesser in those two roles, I'm not sure how well this movie works, because it demands so much from them. But the fact that they stepped up to the plate means you don't even have to worry about that. I'll recommend this to pretty much anyone. I mean, like I said, 90 minutes, so it's not going to take up too much of your time, and it looks great.
Yeah, I think we could talk about some stuff that we liked about it first. Again, the performances, like you mentioned, are unreal. Like, Hoffman and Johnson have so much juice. It's crazy. Like, they're both clearly going to be, at least I think, and I think you've mentioned this too, in our chat, like, I think you said something like, this would be a movie you look back on later, like, holy shit, like, they were in a movie together. Yeah. And I agree with you on that. I think they're both, like, you know, we're looking at guys and watching, like, a high school Derrick Henry or something like that. You know what
exactly.
I mean?
Exactly.
Like, that's, but both of them are on the same team, and I think they both crushed it. Very, very good shit from both of them.
Yeah, no, I expected Hoffman to be great, but Johnson really, I mean, I watched it and then I immediately went back and I went to go see Rye Lane, which, did you watch that from a few years ago? And I was like, this man can just kind of, because he's so different, and Alien, Romulus, and Rye Lane, and then The Long Walk.
Industry,
it's
too.
Pretty impressive, yeah. And I've watched a little bit of Industry because my girlfriend's a big fan of that. And yeah, no, he's kind of all over the map. Very British, too. I saw someone throw out potential James Bond. Maybe
it might be too small. No, there's no such thing as too small in James Bond, honestly. Daniel Craig can get it.
By the way, we got to talk about how fucking big he was in this movie. He looks like a superhero. He looks like he's going for a superhero casting.
He did get very jacked, which is a good and a bad thing, which we'll get to a little bit later, I think.
Yes.
Another thing I think was good, it looked great. They filmed it in Winnipeg, which I was very surprised by. Uh-huh. But it looked a lot to me like a nameless, faceless Midwest U.S.
Yeah.
area, you know what I mean? And I do think it did a good job of capturing like a very specific kind of like area of the country, like basically like there's like movie and TV America, like middle of the country, and then there's like real middle of the country, and like I think this did a better job of being like real, like you're just kind of walking through cornfields, you know what I mean?
Yeah,
you're walking through like in like barely finding like a three building town in the middle of it, you know what I mean? And I think that looked a lot better than it would have been if it was like, this is some studio bullshit. And it looked real. It just looked like they were driving fucking tanks down a street in middle America. It looked like that, which again, is still surprising considering it's Winnipeg.
I also, outside of the way it looked and the way it was acted, I do have complaints about the story, which I'll get to in a second, but I loved how restrained they were in giving us exposition about the world that they lived in. Like, they don't ever stop to explain why is America so broke right now? You know, yeah. How did they get to this point? It's just, this is what it is. This is these boys' circumstance, and this is how they're dealing with it. And I think that really lets the performances shine more than anything. Now, it's kind of a double-edged sword, because there are points where you're just nonstop asking questions about, well, if all these boys know that they're going to have to do the long walk at some point, how are they not more prepared for this? You know, like in shape for this, like, you know, you're doing this. Why would you not like wear better shoes, be in better shape? How are you falling off after 12 miles? Mm-hmm. There's stuff like that. The cameras don't ever really make a lot of sense. Like, where is this broadcasting to? I guess everyone has a TV, even though the country is obscenely poor.
They better not have
sense.
Fucking audio.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, that too. Like, are they picking up the audio? There's some internal logic things that kind of bothered me throughout the movie. I loved how they showed the deaths, like, especially early on. Like, they do not hold back at all. Like, Jojo Rabbit, he gets fucking clopped. And I don't think it's a spoiler to say that a lot of these kids die. I think that's shown in the trailer.
Basis of the movie, yeah.
But how they show it, it was pretty visceral. I will say, by about the fifth time they did that, sixth time they did that, this, like, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So there's only so many times. It's like, and they do it in such like spurts. Like, it's like you could expect it every 10 minutes to get another one.
Yeah. So that would be more in the section where I'm like more about like things I didn't love about it, where like they're unveiling story points as they go, but like, it does get repetitive. Like, there's not an answer to that. There really just isn't. Like, that's just the structure of the book, the structure of there's nothing you can really do there, I think, that makes that, like, better. I think it's kind of like, in my head, like, we talk sometimes with movies, it's like about the ceiling versus the floor version of a movie. Like, this is definitely the ceiling version of it. Like, you can't, there's no way to really fix that, at least in my opinion. And I think that it kind of doesn't like muddy it up, but it's just like you're like, okay, I'm watching another, the same thing happened again and again and again. And another thing where I kind of ended up in a jam with is like, I love these performances and I think they made the movie what it is. But at the same time, I kind of wish the cast was younger. Like they're supposed to be teen boys, right? Which gives you like a very, gives you way more visceral action. Like when the guys who are younger in the group die, like it's way more of like, oh shit. You know what I mean? But like Cooper has a receding hairline. Like David Johnson's my age. Like there's just, I think if they could have gotten like younger actors, like under 18 actors, it would have been a lot more affecting, like the actual concept of it. But at the same time, then you lose performances because these aren't as trained actors. They don't have the experience and all those things. So it's kind of like a weird, what do you value more out of the movie, performance wise or plot wise or feeling wise? So like, I don't know. I mean, you could have drafted or could have picked a bunch of teeny boppers from whatever Netflix bullshit shows and it could have sucked. So I think that. Yeah. This is probably the right move, but at the same time, there is like a level of look at you, teen boy David Johnson. He's like a jacked 32-year-old. Like it's just like there's a part of that where you lose a little bit of your suspension of disbelief.
Yes, Cooper Hoffman, and I love him, but like yeah, old man Cooper Hoffman crying for his mother. Like it doesn't hit the same. It doesn't hit the way it should is what I should say. Like you said, like what do you do there? Because you need the performances to be what they are. And I don't think you can get those performances out of a 16-year-old actor. Like, you'd have to really strike gold and strike gold twice to get two guys who could do that under the age of 18. And, yeah. So I think that's just, like you said, I think they squeezed as much juice out of this script and this story as they possibly could and probably hit the ceiling of what it could be. And I'm happy with what it is. I will probably revisit this in 10 years once the... I mean, it's not just Hoffman and Johnson. Like, this is a laundry list of, like, actors who already have pretty significant roles to their name.
Yeah.
Like I said, Roman Griffiths Davis from Jojo Rabbit, Ben Wang has a few roles under his belt. I mean, they have Christopher Plummer's grandson. Yeah. Like, up and down the list, good young actors who... all perform better, unfortunately, than our story's antagonist, played by Mark Hamill, who is hidden out of... They tried to hide that man the entire movie. They put him in sunglasses, gave him a goatee and a fat suit, a hat, made him change his voice.
Yeah.
They did not want you to know that was Mark Hamill, and unfortunately, the man really just can't act.
It was tough because like, you could tell I love Mark Hamill. His lib ass wanted that role so bad. He wanted that shit more than anything.
Boys, you got buzz. Yeah, boys.
We're men. Like, I don't know how much more, what more you need really out of that role either, though. You know what I mean? Where it's like, I don't know what more you can give from that position. So, again, that's another thing where like, I don't think you get a big value max out of getting a better actor in that role. But yeah, I think I enjoyed it. I wonder how much it cost to make, honestly.
That's a good question. Because I can't imagine any of these guys were too expensive. Like, good actors, like I said, with credits to their names, but they're still young and probably don't demand like a high fee. Mark Hamill obviously doesn't. Can't imagine this IP was too expensive.
It's $20 million.
Okay.
To make, it made $11 million so far in the box office.
Yeah, that's going to be a hit. I mean, that'll make money for them.
Yeah, I mean,
it's a good movie.
This didn't require a lot. Like, you just needed like a couple army props, and like, really, that was it. Like, not really
it'll do very well on streaming too, because it's very YA. I don't think they really sold it that way, but it is. It's a YA movie for all intents and purposes.
Yeah, and just like, just one last thing I'd like to just note on it. Like, I like the ending a lot. I obviously never read the book. Yeah. The ending was very shocking, and I thought it was very well played by both.
Yeah.
All three, I guess, there in that case. Like Hamill, I thought was, is, again, maybe didn't have many moments in this movie, but I think he had a good moment there. David Johnson and Cooper Hoffman, all three of them, I thought played that really well.
Yeah, me too. I like that a lot.
I also got the guy, who's the guy that played the, I don't know if he was supposed to be Native American. That guy was good too.
Yeah, he was good.
Fuck, what was his name? I don't remember what his name was in the movie. He was cool as fuck too.
Let me see if I can pull it up.
Also, the religious guy, I thought, oh, I mean, everyone was good. They were all.
No. Yeah. There wasn't the religious guy, place. Arthur Baker Tut-Nyot. Yeah, he was fantastic. He was from, what, Georgia or something, Alabama?
Yeah.
The Native American man, Joshua Ojik.
That's him? Holly Parker?
Yes.
Yeah, he fucking rocked. That guy was great.
Yeah, he was great. Yeah, all these young men did. I mean, they were great up and down the board. I was pleasantly surprised, not surprised, but, you know, happy to see that. We have two movies this year that are just filled with young male actors, which will be fun to go back to, I think, in about 10 to 15 years. This and Warfare, both.
Yeah, which, by the way, just came to Max, I believe. Mm-hmm. Warfare.
I don't think I'm going to rewatch that for a while.
That's one you let sit for.
Good
a while.
Movie, but
if you haven't seen it, I would highly recommend.
Yes, it's just one of those movies that you watch once.
Yeah, exactly.
And then,
so that's Long Walk. Liked it a lot. One of the better Stephen King adaptations in a while, I would say. Although he had one kind of recently, which wasn't awful, right? King movie adaptations. Let's see. He definitely had a movie more recently than I'm thinking of. Other film adaptation. Holy shit, dude. Oh, The Monkey. The motherfucking monkey.
Yeah,
The Monkey bad. Salem's Lot bad. Life of Chuck.
Okay.
That's what I was missing. Anyway, but yeah, Long Walk. Enjoyed it quite a bit. What's that?
What would you give that, The Long Walk? We've been bad about saying our scores.
Yeah, we've been bad about scores. I would give it like somewhere, probably like, I'm trying to be a little bit more, like less nice. As much as as it means that to say, I'm trying to be like less like forgiving in rankings. I'd probably give it like an 81.
Okay. Like, yeah, I'm probably at it like a 70. But good movie. I mean, and I think the Rotten Tomatoes score, both critically and commercially, or fan audience scores, kind of reflect that. Like,
yeah.
Even if you didn't love it, I think most people are on the positive side of things.
Yeah.
Dedication isn't born in the light of day. It's carved in the quiet hours. Before the world blinks awake. At Boar's Head, we rise with a mission. To deliver craftsmanship worthy of your table. A slice of something special, folded into every moment worth savoring. Because dedication means delivering only the very best. Boar's Head, committed to craft since 1905.
So that's The Long Walk. Next week, a lot of stuff we could get to. We do have Spinal Tap 2, which is apparently not bad. Apparently.
We do it.
Spinal Tap. We have a History of Sound where Paul Mescal and Josh O'Connor are making out.
I don't know if that'll be a good review movie.
Yeah.
It's a good movie, but like it's a bit dour.
The Wrong Paris with Miranda Cosgrove. Code 3, Traumatic.
Isn't him? Him this is this weekend, right?
Is it? It is the 19th, yeah. So we get him would probably be the best one. Oh, The Man in My Basement with Defoe and Corey Hawkins, that might be good too.
Oh, before we move on, I got to tell you, guess who was sitting behind me at my screening of The Long Walk?
Who?
Turn around, I see big, big frame glasses, big blonde hair, middle-aged woman sitting squat on her phone. None other than one Grace Randolph.
Oh, wow. Fuck, she... Wait, it was a screening. Okay.
Yeah, it was a screening. And then she immediately tweeted after, I've never seen a man poop on screen before.
First time for everything, right?
Oh, my God. It took everything in me not to ask for a picture.
So I think, by the way, him would be the one for next week. The more I'm looking at the rest of this list. You get, like, Swiped, The Big, Bold, Beautiful Journey, which is not really getting any buzz.
Yeah.
Senior Waltzing with Brando. I forgot about that. Damn.
Oh, with Billy Zane.
Yeah.
Cool guy.
Cool guy. Billy Zane. Prisoner of War. Nope. That's a Scott Adkins thing. It's going to be him. I'm very excited for that. The more I see promo stuff for it, I think, what did they aired the trailer for this ahead of Sinners, right? If I remember correctly. Yeah. And I was like, what the fuck is this? This looks awesome.
Yeah.
And every trailer I've seen since then has only made me more intrigued in it. So very, very excited to watch him.
Let's go.
Yeah, very pumped for that. But yeah, until then, see you guys next week.